just between us.
Hey!
Just between us.
Hey!
Hello! I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, mental health advocate, and my bangs are too long right now.
Hi, I'm Gabe Dunn. I'm a writer, bi-con, bisexual icon, wink, and once again, struggling with my skin.
You know, it's so funny because today I too am struggling with my skin. I have two pimples and I was like, oh, should I wear a Mighty Patch to the recording? And then
I was like,
nah, I guess I'll just wear it later. And then you showed up with one and I was like, I could have worn mine.
Oh, yeah. I got to get the ones that look like stars because I always think that looks cute.
Oh, they make them in star patterns?
You've never seen? Yeah, they make like little, now people kind of wear them like fashion a little bit. Like they're like, they put like, I don't know, it'll be like a yellow star or like some cute little color or something.
Oh.
Like people are wearing them as like part of the outfit.
Wow.
If they need to.
That's cool. You should get those.
Yeah, I should. Because I also really appreciate when people show up. And I think I've talked about it on the show, but like Madison Beer doing that whole interview where she's just got a bunch of those on her face. I love it. Yeah, man. That's how I make myself feel better. Is I go, well, I'm very real is what I am. Sort of and you know, what I'm giving you is very authentic, sort of an acne influencer, if you will. I have to take everything bad that's ever happened to me and make myself an influencer around it so that I can survive. Bipolar influencer, acne influencer, terrible childhood influencer. You add influencer to any of your trauma, baby.
Well,
it's not really trauma.
Bad knees influencer.
Influencer. Why not? Why not?
Well, we've got an incredible show for everyone today.
We're going to be talking to Charles Duhigg all about super communicators.
It's fascinating.
Great
I learned
interview.
So much. I feel like I leave today a better person than I started the day with.
Absolutely. He was an incredible interview.
And later, we're going to be talking about audiobooks because we've recorded them and Melissa directs them a bunch. And I just find them fascinating.
I'm listening to one where the guy is really having clearly a good time reading it. Up next, we've got an exciting interview with our highly esteemed guest, Charles Duhigg. So stay tuned.
Just between us.
Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, most controversial segment known to all podcasting. Tough questions.
This week on the show, we have Charles Duhigg. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and author of The Power of Habit, which spent over 3 years on bestseller lists and has been translated into 40 languages. Super Communicators, also a bestseller, published in 2024, and Smarter, Faster, Better, a third bestseller. Hello, Charles.
Hello.
This is so exciting because you emailed me. And so I felt very thrilled. I was like, this Pulitzer Prize winner has an idea who I am. I was like,
oh, come on. You must get emails all the time.
Not really.
Okay. Now everyone listening knows that they should send more emails to you.
Yeah, exactly. I was thrilled.
What did you say to John?
I was like, you won't believe who this real, really important person is. Like. But it is such a great topic because today we're going to be talking about super communicators. And, you know, one of the first things like you learn in psychology is how much we communicate through body language and
yeah.
How like verbal communication is kind of just like one tenth of it. And so I'd love to know like why focusing on communication became such an interest for you.
Well, it started when I got into this bad pattern with my wife. I've been married for almost 20 years, and this is probably something that is familiar to you and to anyone who's listening. I would come home from work after like a long day, and I would start complaining about my day, and my wife would very sensibly offer these solutions, like, why don't you take your boss out to lunch, and you guys can get to know each other? And instead of being able to hear what she was saying, I would get even more upset, and I'd be like, why aren't you supporting me? You're supposed to be outraged on my behalf. Then she would get upset because I was attacking her for giving me good advice. Sometimes this would happen and we'd flip roles where she was coming to me to talk about how she felt about something and I was trying to solve her feelings. And I wanted to figure out, like, I knew that this was not the right thing to do, and yet this instinct kept plaguing us and I wanted to figure out why. And so I called up all these researchers and asked them, like, what do we know about the science of communication?
And what was some of the stuff that jumped out at you as like, oh, I had no idea about that?
Yeah. Actually, the very first thing they said is, Well, we're actually living through this golden age of understanding communication because of advances in neural imaging and data collection. And they said, look, one of the big things that we've learned is that we tend to think of a discussion as being about one thing, right? We're talking about our day, or we're talking about my book, or whatever we think the topic of discussion is. But actually, every discussion is made up of multiple kinds of conversations. And in general, those conversations, they tend to fall into one of three buckets. So there's these practical discussions where we're trying to solve problems or make plans together. And then there's emotional discussions where I tell you how I'm feeling and I don't want you to solve my feelings. I want you to empathize. And then finally, there's social conversations, which is about how we relate to each other in society and the social identities that are important to us. And they said, look, here's the thing that we know is that if you and the person you're talking to are having different kinds of conversations, you really can't hear each other. Like, you got to be on the same wavelength. You have to be having the same kind of conversation at the same moment. And then once you do, once you're both aligned emotionally or you're both aligned practically, you can move from topic to topic and kind of conversation to kind of conversation together. And this, of course, is exactly what was happening with my wife, right? I was coming home and I was having an emotional conversation and she was having a practical one. And so we really couldn't hear each other very well.
And is it interesting, you know, having probably interviewed so many people for your journalism career, to sort of like be learning maybe new ways to ask questions and relate to people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's changed entirely kind of, you know, I think I'm a reporter right now at The New Yorker, and I used to be at The New York Times. And I think a lot of my reporting was very practical. It was calling people up and asking them for details or facts. And sometimes people would say something emotional. And instead of being able to pick up on that or to match them or to invite them to kind of get deeper with me, I would usually just kind of move on to the next question on my list. And that's exactly the wrong way to do it, right? When we have a connection with someone, it feels like a connection because there's this back and forth, because we're listening to each other. We're proving that we're listening to each other. And as a result, we feel like we really want to connect with the other person, because when we say something emotional, they say, oh, you know, tell me more about that, or I'm sorry that happened, or something similar happened to me. And that's really, really powerful.
How do you learn your style in that way? Is it just without thinking about it, like just subconsciously, the people that say, oh, I'm so sorry, or the people that say, okay, well, this is how I relate to that. Like, is that like inherent from your family, or how do you become the type of communicator you are?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with just learning some basic skills. I mean, one of the things that we've learned is that there are these people who can kind of consistently connect with almost anyone. And we refer to them as super communicators. And what they seem to have is just a set of skills that they've learned, frankly, that any of us can learn. And in fact, we know that it doesn't matter if you're an extrovert or introvert or charismatic or curmudgeonly, like anyone can become a super communicator. And that what you refer to as that instinct is actually a learned habit, and it's a practiced habit. And so one of the things that's really important is, for instance, asking the right kind of questions. Within psychology, the most powerful questions are known as deep questions, because they ask us about our values or our beliefs or our experiences. And that can sound kind of intimidating, right? Like we're gonna have to cry together. But actually, it's as simple as like bumping into someone and saying like, oh, you know, what do you do for a living? And the person says, oh, I'm a doctor. And like, you could ask like, oh, where do you practice medicine? But a better thing to ask is, oh, what made you decide to become a doctor? Or like, what do you love about being a doctor? Right? When you ask that question, a deep question, what you're doing is you're inviting this person to tell you not only how they see themselves and what's important to them, but what kind of mindset they're in. And if they say something like, oh, I always wanted to be a doctor because I just wanted a steady job, and I knew that medicine would do that, then you know this person's in a practical mindset. But if it's someone who says, oh, you know, I saw my dad get sick when I was a kid, and I wanted to be part of healing, then that person is in an emotional mindset. And it's not hard to pick up on this once you know what to look for. It's not that some of us are born with this and some of us aren't. It's just that if you've learned to look for it, then you're a little bit more sensitive to it when you see it.
We're going to take a quick break for commercials, and we'll be right back with our guest.
Hi, everyone. Allison here.
Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I am so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options. Shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes out, and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley, and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough. Turtles All the Way Down is the acclaimed number one bestseller by John Green, author of The Fault in Our Stars and Paper Towns. Turtles All the Way Down is now streaming on Max. NPR named the novel a, quote, "sometimes heartbreaking, always illuminating glimpse into how it feels to live with mental illness." Aza Holmes never intended to pursue the disappearance of fugitive billionaire Russell Pickett, but there's a $100,000 reward at stake, and her best and most fearless friend Daisy is eager to investigate. So together, they navigate the short distance and broad divides that separate them from Pickett's son, Davis. Aza is trying. She's trying to be a good daughter, a good friend, a good student, and maybe even a good detective, while also living with the ever-tightening spiral of her own thoughts. Turtles All the Way Down is a brilliant novel about love, resilience, and the power of lifelong friendship. As someone with OCD, it is so wonderful to see OCD represented in an incredible book. I think it is so important that we talk about mental illness, both in our own lives and through narrative. Buy your copy of Turtles All the Way Down in stores today and catch the movie streaming on Max. Just between us. Yeah, I mean, I went from having to go to like a social skills class when I was 12 to now feeling like I have learned how to have a conversation. And I love that you say that it is like a skill set that you can like work on rather than just an innate gift. Mm. And I almost feel like because I struggled socially so much, I had to learn how to be like a good communicator.
And I want to ask you more about that class because that sounds really interesting. But you're exactly right. One of the things that we know about super communicators is that when you ask them, "Were you always good at communication?" they often say no. They often say things like, "I had trouble making friends in high school," or "my parents got divorced and I had to be the peacemaker between them." What they're really saying there is, "I had to think about communication a little bit more." And it's that thinking about communication, just like half an inch deeper, that makes us into super communicators, because then we start noticing all these things that we missed before. But can I ask about the class? So tell me about it when you were 12. Like, why did you go and what happened?
I have such a poor memory. I don't really remember too much about the class itself, but I've had OCD since I was 4. And so that meant that I would impulsively say things. Like, I didn't have a sense of like what was appropriate to say and what wasn't. I would just like have the thought and then need to like release myself of the thought, which then obviously caused people not to like me and for me to have social problems. And so I, you know, like, I don't remember exactly like the skill sets in that class, but I do know that like I am now hyper aware of how I communicate with people, and I am hyper aware of trying to be present when people are talking to me and be a good listener and an active listener in a way that like maybe I wouldn't have put that time and effort into if I hadn't had to struggle to begin with.
Well, and my guess is, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, even though it's hard to remember, yeah, because when you're 12, you learn a lot of stuff. But my guess is that they kind of practiced with you a little bit. Like they would model active listening and then have you practice doing listening to them. Does that sound familiar?
You know, I can't remember, but something that has been the most helpful for me is learning what not to say.
Yeah, that's like, interesting. That's really like what do you mean?
Like to this day, I censor myself because I know that I'm having thoughts that are not appropriate to share, or that would be abrasive, or that would be off-putting. And so like realizing like when maybe there's some people in my life, maybe that's safe to share that with. But like, really, I mean, I've told you this, like there'll be moments where I'm just like, Allison, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that.
Yeah. And my guess is, and again, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. My guess is what's going on is that you have learned to realize that some things you say, they don't actually, they're not matching the other person. Like the other person is saying something personal and you have this instinct to say something funny. And the reason why that wouldn't work is because they're obviously, they're not in a mindset where they're asking for funny right now, right? And it might be because you feel a little uncomfortable or just because you are a funny person and this is what comes to you. But I think that like what I hear you saying, and tell me if you think this is wrong, is you've learned to match other people. You've learned to pay attention to how other people are speaking and what they're saying and how they're saying it to help you figure out how to get on the same wavelength as them.
I hope so.
What's interesting is that our brains have evolved to not only be really good at this, but to crave it, right? So if you think about it, communication is Homo sapiens' superpower. Like it is the thing that like makes us different from every other species. It's allowed us to create families and villages and towns and countries and, you know, transmit knowledge without having to experience those things ourselves. Communication is the thing that makes Homo sapiens Homo sapiens. And so one consequence of that is that our brain has evolved to crave conversation and to crave connection. And so oftentimes teaching you skills like the skills you learned when you were 12 or the skills that you use right now, they're just about causing you to notice a little bit more about how you can connect with other people, because that's so important to actually making that connection come true. And those connections are the most important things in our lives.
Yeah. I've noticed more so trying to figure out what kind of conversation the other person is trying to have. Like sometimes with me and you, like I'll want to explain something, but I'm like over explaining it. And I have to be like, okay, what is she really asking? Like, is she asking for me to explain step by step what I'm doing? Or is she just asking like, okay, how is this going to work? And what do I need to do?
So
I was like, and we've known each other 10 years. And I was like, something was going on. And I was like trying to figure out like why, at least like we're missing each other. And then it was like, oh, you're just asking, what do I need to do? And I'm explaining everything that needs to happen. Yeah. And so I was with my ex and my ex was like, what is she actually asking? Look at what she wrote and what is the question? And I was like, oh, I'm sick, because I would want to know every step. And he was like, but look at what she's asking.
Yeah.
And then I was like, right. What is she asking?
What was this about?
It was about explaining like something to do with the show.
Yeah.
Something to do with like accounting for the show.
Yeah.
And he was like, you're overwhelming her because she doesn't want to hear the numbers.
And one thing you can do that makes it a lot better is, so something, again, we are all super communicators at one time or another, right? Like when your friend calls you, you know exactly what to say to make them feel better. Or when you walk into a meeting, you know exactly like how to win over everyone over to your idea. So we all have moments of super communication, but some people can do it consistently. Some people can do it basically with anyone. And one of the things that we know about them is that they tend to ask 10 to 20 times as many questions as the average person. And like some of those questions are the deep questions I just mentioned, but some of them are pretty like simple, like, you know, oh, what'd you say next? Like, I'm going to invite you into the conversation. Or to the point you just raised, to say to someone, okay, do you want me to explain everything about this? Or do you just have one very simple question you want me to answer, right? That's what my wife and I do now. Like when I come home and I'm complaining about my day, the first thing she'll often say is, do you want me to help you solve this? Or do you just need to vent and get this off your chest? And of course I'm like, oh, I just need to vent. I just want you to listen. It's not that big a deal. And it feels good to be asked. It feels like someone is giving you what you're looking for, what you want. And so oftentimes just asking a question helps resolve a lot of that potential miscommunication.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I feel like I'm a good communicator except when I really disagree with someone about something. That feels like when all my tools, like all my empathy, like all my self-restraint sort of just like flies out the window. And so
yeah.
Is there any difference about like how to communicate when you're just on polar opposite sides of an issue?
Yeah. And this actually happens all the time. And these are often referred to as conflict conversations, right? Where we disagree about something or we're fighting with each other or, okay, so let me ask you this. So take yourself back to the last time you had one of those conversations. What were you feeling? Like this person comes in and they say like, I love Trump and you hate Trump, or I love Biden and you hate Biden. Something where the person has kind of defined themselves in a way that feels very opposite to how you feel. What are you feeling at that moment?
The last conversation was over text message, but I felt disgust and disappointment.
Okay. And both of those are actually things that trigger our fight or flight instinct, right? Like when we disgust is actually has a really interesting evolutionary past. And when we see something that makes us feel disgust, it causes us to want to run away. Mm-hmm. Right? That's kind of the role of disgust, is that it helps us avoid things that might be dangerous to us because they're toxins. Disappointment, similarly, is disappointing, right? It feels like a downer. So what's interesting is what's happening is that you are triggering, or what's being triggered is this fight or flight instinct, right? It could be a situation where you can run away. It might also be a situation where you think like, actually running away isn't the right thing to do. I'm going to tell this person how wrong they are. That fight or flight instinct is very, very good in a state of nature for situations where we have to run away or we have to kill someone else. But in contemporary society, it's a lot less useful, right? Yeah. Because oftentimes fight or flight is not the right answer. So what is the right answer? Well, the right answer is to kind of recognize that the goal of a conversation is not to be right or wrong. It's not to convince the other person that they're wrong and you're right. It's not even to impress them or make them think you're smart or get them to rethink all of their beliefs. The goal of a conversation is just to understand what the other person is trying to say to you and to speak in such a way that they can understand you. And that doesn't mean you're going to agree with each other, but here's the thing. You don't agree 100% with anyone in your life. Right? The two of you, I'm sure, have disagreements about things. There's things that if I asked you about, you know, do you like Star Wars or Star Trek or Pop-Tarts or cereal, that you guys would come out on different places. And yet you recognize that this one disagreement, that's not really that important. What's important is that when you guys talk about stuff that matters to you, that you understand each other. And it lowers the expectations and the temperature so much for you if you go into a conversation saying, look, I just have to understand what this person is saying. And I have to help them understand what I am saying. Whether we agree with each other or not, whether we even have anything in common, that's a secondary concern. Now all of a sudden the conversation's pretty easy for you. And there's some ways, some skills to make that conversation even easier.
What are those?
Okay. So the first and most important one is that in a conflict conversation, because that fight or flight has been triggered, there is a suspicion in the back of your mind that the other person is not listening to you and is just waiting their turn to speak. And similarly, they're suspicious of the same thing, right? We're talking about politics and like, I don't really feel like you're listening to what I'm saying. I think you're just waiting to tell me why I'm wrong. So one of the things that we can do that's really powerful is we can prove that we're listening. And there's a pretty easy technique for this that's known as looping for understanding. And it has three steps. Step one is ask a question, preferably a deep question. Step two is repeat back what the person just said in your own words, like show them that you heard them. And then step number three is ask them if you got it right. which is a form of asking them permission to acknowledge that you've been listening. What we know happens if you do that is that the temperature of the conversation goes down significantly, and more importantly, they become more willing to listen to you. It's an instinct in our brain, social reciprocity, that when I prove I'm listening, you become more likely to listen to me in return. And the reason that's important is because, again, you're not trying to convince them that they're wrong. You're trying to convince them that you understand what they're saying. And once you do that, almost inevitably, you get to a place where both people are listening to each other, both people are understanding each other, and then you find ways, things that you have in common that actually connect to the things that you disagree about, right? Let's take politics again as an example. You're talking to someone, they love Trump, you hate Trump, and you're having this conversation and you ask questions. There's this phrase, if you're feeling furious, get curious, that I think is a helpful reminder to us. You're asking questions, you're proving that you're listening. And what you hear the other person say is like, I'm really concerned about safety. And I feel like my candidate is going to do a better job on safety. And then you get a chance to say like, actually, I think of I'm really concerned about safety too. But the way I think about it is like how safe my kids are in school. Like, you know, are we doing things on guns? How safe my kids are if they're different? Are we doing the right things on diversity? But we both care about our kids and we both care about safety. And we come at it from different angles and that leads us to different conclusions. But that doesn't mean we can't understand each other. And in fact, we can have a conversation and hearing why someone cares about safety when you care and sharing why you care about safety, that actually makes us feel connected. Even if we walk away still disagreeing with each other, we feel like we've done something important.
If you want to hear the rest of this episode, and let me tell you, you do, head over to patreon.com/justbetweenus. And for $3 a month, you can get access to all of our podcast episodes in full ad-free. Okay, that's it. Tatala Titu.
Tatala Titu.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.